This episode is brought to you by Awesome CX by Transcom. Awesome CX provides high-touch, personalized customer experience services to consumer brands of any size. Stay tuned for a special offer for Stairway to CEO listeners later in the show. Hello, everyone. It's Lee Green, and welcome back to the Stairway to CEO podcast. It's my mission to bring you real, honest, and unfiltered interviews with some of the most innovative founders and CEOs from all walks of life. We'll talk about their climb to the top, their stumbles along the way, and the steps they took to get them to where they are. So tune in to get inspired, listen to some real talk, and enjoy the show. Hello, everyone. I'm your host, Lee Green, and welcome back to the show. This is episode 194, and today I sat down with Allegra Moe Brantley, the founder and CEO of Factora. Factora is on a mission to lead 1 million women to $1 million in wealth. Through their live online course and community called The Wealth Circle, Factora teaches and empowers hundreds of women on how to build financial lives they love. Allegra shares her story from building her first company, a luxury loungewear brand, to becoming a salary negotiation coach, to leading partnerships and marketing at Financial Gym, where she came up with the idea for building Factora. I hope you enjoy this episode, and thanks so much for listening. Hi, Allegra. Thanks so much for joining me on the show today. I'm excited to hear your story in building Factora. How are you today?
I'm good. Thanks for having me, Lee.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been seeing you. I don't know how I discovered you, but I feel like I've been seeing these posts on LinkedIn and you're like publicly sharing like financial information and asking all these people and they're commenting and they're doing it. And I was like, wow, why are all these women like disclosing their financial status? I found it so amazing. And I thought, wow, what a taboo topic, really, finance for women. And I love how much transparency you're bringing to the world. So thanks so much for doing that. And I'm excited to hear your story.
Thanks for sharing about all the LinkedIn transparency. I think about LinkedIn as this channel where we all go to build our career, which is just the fancy way of saying make money. And then no one really talks about what we do with that money or how to grow that money. So for me, LinkedIn is the perfect place to really double click on why we're even making incomes. You know, we all have families we want to afford and lifestyles we want
And we all want to be rich. Let's just be honest. Like if you're in America and you don't think you want to be rich, you're living in the wrong place. You can just live in Europe and be fine. But in America, we're in capitalist country here. And it's like everybody is just hungry to make it to the next level. And so I find it really fascinating that everybody was so open because I think of it with my own friend group and I'm like, wow, I have no clue what my friends make, what they invest in. Like you really rarely talk about it. And it's like, why? I like this stuff.
You got to start asking them because that's how we get rid of the taboo. We lean into these conversations. I do it with my friend group too, which by the way, I thought my friend group were going to be my first customers. I was like, oh, absolutely. Like they're all going to want to do this. No, no. But it's so funny. They do.
You're like, I'm not offended.
I'm not. I'm just like surprised because I was like, I built this with you in mind because, you know, like I am my customer and they are my best friends. So I just thought that would be an automatic. But they do text me all the time. They're like, are you doing a backdoor Roth? Should I be doing a backdoor Roth? You know, like I'm getting ready for a salary negotiation conversation. Like, can I call you about comp? I'm like, absolutely. Or you could also just, you know, join this community and ask so many hundreds of women, because that's really why I am transparent. And I think the leading by example, these other women take initiative to be transparent too, because they know that when they start talking, because they've experienced it when they join a Factora Well Circle, it is so nerve-wracking and cathartic to just share these numbers we never do. In the very first call, they're sharing their salary. Well, guess what? Salary is so easy to share because it only defines what we make in a year. Net worth means what have we been doing for a while now, right? Debt is like, what have we signed ourselves on for? Assets is like a whole nother area because it's like, do we have stock market investments beyond our retirement accounts? Do we have real estate investments? Do we have business investments? There's so much potential. And that's the thing that gets talked about least. So I think that what happens in a factorial wealth circle is women come for their own like desire to be better with their money. And then they stay for the community because they're like, wow, she's doing this and she's talking about it openly. And it's just a very galvanizing experience to all have one thing in common. And that's just wanting to be a good steward of your money. And then realize, wow, when we share resources and investment strategies, it's such a wealth of knowledge.
And so cool. Well, I can't wait to hear more about Factoria, this community that you've built. Let's start from the very beginning and learn more about you. Where are you from originally? What was childhood like growing up? Were you always into finance?
No. Well, I was born in Los Angeles.
That's where I am right now.
I know.
Born and raised here. All right.
Not raised. I was there for about 18 months. So I'm definitely not.
Does that even count?
I think I'm from LA. No. Born in LA. Definitely not from LA. Born on the West Coast. And then I spent my whole life growing up all around the East Coast. So starting in North Carolina, moving to Miami, Florida. I went to an all-girls boarding school in Virginia. I went to college in South Carolina. And then I ended up in New York.
Why did you move around so much? What did your parents do?
I just had a single mother who was on a self-discovery mission and I was riding shotgun.
Oh my gosh. Self-discovery. So what made her want to go from North Carolina to Miami and Virginia? Like, what was she seeking?
Well, so she left North Carolina because she had a bad breakup. My mother was born and raised in Brazil. And I think she wanted what felt like closer to home to be around more South Americans. And I will say, we moved to Miami, Florida in the middle of sixth grade. Like, I'm telling you, I didn't even tell my first boyfriend that we were moving because one, I didn't want to believe it. And two, I was too embarrassed that I wasn't going to show back up at school. So I didn't know what to do. So I was just like praying it wouldn't happen. And lo and behold, flew to LA to visit my dad's family for Christmas. And I flew back to Miami. That first boyfriend had to find out the hard way when I didn't come show to school.
Oh my gosh. Oh, that poor guy.
I know. I felt bad about that one. She had a bad breakup, decided to move to Miami, be around more Brazilians. And I really felt like Miami was the place for me for the first time. I never really felt like I fit in until we were around this South American culture and vibe. I loved 9 p.m. dinners and just loud.
In sixth grade, 9 p.m. dinners.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. And so that was how we ended up in Miami. And it was a great time. But I was at the local public middle school, which was a little rough. It was a little rough. We got our lockers taken away within maybe a month or two of me getting there. And you know, in middle school, it's all about the locker.
Taken away? How did they get taken away?
Well, they put like chains through them so that you couldn't use them anymore.
Who did that?
The school, the administration, because there's too much drug trafficking through the locker system.
Wow.
And I had never seen a drug. So I was like, are you kidding me? We don't have lockers. That's like the whole point of middle school. So yeah. And then that middle school just kind of dumps their roster over to the local public high school. And I was actually a truant in the state of Florida because I never showed up to that public high school because I was fortunate enough to be admitted to the boarding school my mother had gone to that had a scholarship program for daughters of, and I did a detour to Middleburg, Virginia, horsey country, very preppy. And I wasn't able to get my license on time because they thought I was abandoning school. But my mom was like, no, I assure you, she's just a few states away. So we got that paperwork all fixed eventually.
Well, that's cool. So you went to a boarding school. So it means you're living on campus for high school, which people don't really do until college living, but obviously boarding school is different. So what was it like? And it was all girls.
It was all girls. And it was the best experience.
What was that experience like?
It was incredible. I am such a fan of boarding school. I do recognize that it's going to be dependent on the child. I mean, not child, I'm 14, but you're still quite young. So I was very independent, and that was helpful to get put into this situation. Because, you know, if you're having issues in school with a friend, if you're having a little friend drama, you get picked up by your parents at the end of the day and you can cool off and sleep on it before the next day when you have to face that. But at boarding school, you go from class to sports to dinner to what's it called? Study session? I forget. But basically, you're together all the time. And then you go to sleep in the dorms and you have to face the problems the whole time. So I think it gives, especially girls, a really good head start on social problem solving and not interjecting into fight or friend issue when it doesn't involve you.
Interesting.
Which, yeah, it was cool. I mean, it was definitely.
I wish I went to boarding school. God, my high school experience is horrible with women.
And I imagine that social can be really hard with high school, but also the reason that all girls boarding schools get a lot of great praise is because taking boys out of the educational environment allows women to lean in a lot more, raise their hand, talk. They're not competing with guys at all. They're just with each other. And so it was so cool to be good at school and to be involved in the school. And there were so many extracurriculars and clubs to run. You could start a club. You could start a club for anything. And so we did. And it was really fun.
Yeah, you know, I think I would have benefited from that. And I think I would have probably, you know, spared myself some serious heartache with some of the girls wanting my boyfriend. You know, that's literally what it was about. It's like, what is wrong with you? Like, get your own, you know? It's so weird. But it was annoying.
It was funny because my boarding school situation, you know, it was right when AIM and all the like computer chat was happening. So you would go to a mixer at a boys' school or they'd come to yours. And you'd get their little chat name. And like, that was it.
AOL.
That was our relationships in high school, was literally just talking to these different boys we'd met at dances, you know, once a month.
That's awesome. So you went to this boarding school. And then what did you do after that? You finished your high school in Virginia. Then what?
And then I went to College of Charleston in South Carolina. My college experience was interesting because it was my backup school, but I decided to go to it for a very immature reason, which was that I didn't get into my top choice. Oddly, was Wake Forest. I still look back and I'm like, why was I so gung-ho on that school? But I got into these other really great schools like University of Miami, but my mom was living in Miami and I liked being a few states away. Babson, like really good schools that you can probably tell as a listener to this podcast, I was a nerd. I loved school and I should have probably chosen a more academically aligned college experience, but I was like, no, I did everything right and I didn't get into my top choice, so I'm going to go party. And I did do that.
So you studied what, business at Charleston?
I did. I studied business with a minor in entrepreneurship, which was very funny because they were just starting that minor. And it's very entrepreneurial in that they started it and immediately were like, we're probably not going to continue this. So the first little entrepreneurship group, we fought really hard to keep that minor going. And that felt like the business in and of itself.
That's really cool. And so then after college, did you have internships? What were some of your first jobs?
Whew, I graduated in 2008. So it was poor timing for getting a job. I stayed in Charleston for another probably 6 months. I was in food and bev. I mean, I really couldn't find anything. And then I decided to pack up my stuff and move to Miami. My mom was no longer living there, but my dad was. And so I was like, I need a bigger city than Charleston, South Carolina to try and start a career in this recession. And so I remember applying for this job. I sat at a Dunkin' Donuts like all day long and applied for jobs. But there was this one I was really into. And it was a company out of the UK. It was an event company. So they did these like executive high-end events at 4- and 5-star hotels. And I just wanted this job. Like, this was the only thing that came across my plate that I was like, this is the one. And I went up for it and I did not get it. I interviewed and did the whole process, but ultimately they went with someone else. And then the job came back online like 4 weeks later. It's like, I am going to get this job. And so I remember going back into interview, and the man who ended up becoming, you know, my first boss, my manager, he was German. And I just remember him point blank being very frank German and saying, I am going to give you this job because you are not going to go away. And I am aware of that. So we're going to give you a chance. And they did. It was interesting to be working at a very young company. Like, everyone in the Miami office was 27 and under, like, you know, kind of this 22 to 27 age. And a lot of people already had their MBAs, and we were making, all of us were making $25,000 as our first annual salary. And it's very hard to live in Miami on $25,000, but we managed, and it was a fun experience. And through that, I ended up, one of the summits that I was in charge of was the CMO summit. And so I remember thinking, okay, I'm going to invite CMOs of companies I'm very interested in, and then I'm going to make a relationship with them, and then I'm going to get a job at one of these companies. It worked. I invited a marketing executive from the Estee Lauder companies, and we hit it off. And I ended up getting to interview for, you know, the lowest associate role on her team, and ultimately taking that job in New York. And when I went to what I thought was going to be my final interview, but really they sent me to the HQ on Fifth Avenue at the top of these fancy buildings, I was in the HR department. And I remember a woman saying, you know, we'd like to offer you the role, just sign here, and it will be a $40,000 salary. And I thought, oh my God, I'm going to get a $15,000 bump just for taking a new job. This is wild. And then fast forward to what I actually do now, I had no idea, standing in that office, one, that I should and could be negotiating for more, two, that you should not sign anything without reading it, taking it home, sleeping on it, you know, having a little bit more advisement, and three, that I would go on to help people with their financial decisions way later, because that was definitely a big regret. I had no idea that Florida had no income taxes, and I was moving to New York City, which had some of the highest. So really, while I thought I made a $15,000 salary increase, I was going to be making less in a higher cost of living. That was a huge gut check when I figured that out the hard way.
That's funny. Well, and looking back, when you say, oh, I really wish I would have maybe negotiated, or I would have looked at, would have read the contract a little bit better, I think that a lot of women, probably especially, don't want to ruffle feathers. And so they feel like, oh, I can't, I really need this job. So I'm just going to be like, yes, yes, yes.
Oh yeah. I remember standing in that office thinking, I'm not interviewing. I'm not going through another round of interviews today. You've just chosen me. How lucky am I? It was always very, put the employer in the power seat and take it like a, what luck for me. I just need to sign and not disturb. I can't even, like, I'm not even equipped for this job and they're offering it to me. I have seen so many women think that. They're like, wow, I'm looking at this job description and I've only done like 2 or 3 bullets on here. So I'm not even qualified. So if I get the job, I sure as heck can't ask for more. And I'm like, let me tell you how I've seen some personal guy friends read a job description. And it's like, oh, I've done one of these. I'll figure out the rest on the job. No qualms. And I'm going to ask for more again twice before I accept and sign.
So you were working in the marketing department at Estee Lauder. I think you were over there for a little over a year. How did it go? What was it like? What were some of the things that you did there? What were some of the learnings?
The learning was, even though I had this really cool title and I showed up to a really swanky down in Soho office, because HQ was uptown, but like the cool digital marketing group was downtown, I was a glorified assistant. Being a marketer, I want to be clear, just the way the Estee Lauder companies are structured, I worked for the Estee Lauder companies corporate. And then we had at the time a 28 brand portfolio, MAC, Bobbi Brown, Smashbox, Origins, you name it, like so many different brands. But at the corporate level, you are really more of a resource for the brands in that portfolio. So marketing in the corporate marketing department meant doing zero marketing. It meant finding really cool marketing agencies that we hire to do different projects. And then we take that information and we bring it down to the brand level, and then that you can choose to use it or not. So probably the coolest thing I did was, it was early Twitter. I was able to partner with some of our makeup brands at Fashion Week and live tweet from the back of Fashion Week. That was pretty fun. But it was always just testing so that we could give the brands a heads up on what's happening in the digital marketing space. It's like, I remember at one point we were like, QR codes are going to be all the rage. And so we would teach them about how they could potentially use QR codes.
That's funny. So after that, you started your first company, I think. Can you tell me how you came up with the idea and how that went?
You know who Man Repeller is?
Yeah, it was like she was like a really big blogger. I don't even know her anymore, but yeah, she had this like really cool fashionable blog, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly who she is, what she was. And I thought I was going to be the next Man Repeller, but for luxury loungewear. Like in my mind, it was a cross between that and Sex and the City. Like my face was going to be on a bus in this loungy, amazing robe. So the idea for my first company, which is called AMOA, which was a luxury loungewear brand that focused on robes, was to fuse the utility of a bathrobe, right? It gets us dry. It's like useful and comfortable to walk around the house in and do, you know, make coffee and answer the door. And a lingerie robe, which has no utility, but actually has a nice silhouette and looks good on the body. And so I developed a microfiber material that was moisture wicking. So utility, got you dry, but you could also put beautiful prints on them. So I developed a fabric in Korea, and then I had it shipped here. And then I did heat transfer printing in California, and then shipped to New York where we did cut and sew. And it was a wild experience to figure out all the pieces to building a real life product.
Yeah. That's awesome. So how long did you do that for, and how big did you grow the business? Or was it always kind of like a side hustle, or how did that work?
It was a full hustle at one point in time, but it was another precursor for what would ultimately become Factora. I was just so passionate about this robe being the best robe, that every woman should have the ability to buy this like beautiful thing that they can wear and answer the door and like, get ready. You know, if you look at, I was really into film noir too. If you look at these old movies, there was always this dressing gown situation where a woman looked great before she was even ready. You don't look like that in a bathrobe. So I really did feel like it filled this void. And I still believe it's the best robe not on the market today. But it lasted 5 years, and it was a precursor to getting my financial shit together, because I went into debt to do it. We did do a little bit of friends and family raise, but that doesn't go far with a fashion company. So then I just opened up credit cards and used them up until I was like, okay, I'm sweating now. I have been doing, and I did side hustle things that I needed to for the brand. Like I worked for a photographer in Brooklyn, so he would do my photo and videography for trade. You know, I hustled. And then I got really stressed financially, and I thought, okay, I need to go back to work for a company, but but that's in the fashion technology space, because that'll help with MOA. And so I did. I found a company called Decoded Fashion that I went to work for, but it was a startup. And what I know you know about startups is it's pretty much all or nothing. There's not really time for side hustling, especially in early days. And so I went all in on that company. It was an amazing experience because we did these fashion technology summits all around the world. And I got to travel to Milan and London frequently. And we did them in New York, of course. And I was in sales. So I was able to find new technology that could go into retail specific to fashion and beauty brands. And I would sell them into these summits so that they could meet the brands that were speaking at the events. And it was a ride. It was a really good time, but it was also my foray back into the corporate structure of things. And I had a learning there too, that I was grossly underpaid. And so I went up for a base salary adjustment. And you know you're underpaid when they agree to pay you $25,000 more in one fell swoop, which I thought was amazing to begin with. And then I immediately felt immense resentment for working at a company that was grossly underpaying me. And I was able to show them, like, when you're in sales, it's like, this is how much money I'm making you. Where's the kickback to me? Their response for a while before they gave me the extra salary was, you're green, like you're new. And so no. And I was like,
so you weren't even getting any commissions on your sales.
No, I was. Oh, but okay. I'm saying my salary was so low for the total amount I was bringing in to them. And which that's great with sales. Like you really can. I was like, no, just look again. And they were like, okay. Yeah, we'll pay you more. But then they changed my commission structure. So it's like they put it into my base and kind of took it out of my commission. And so I was too disgruntled to stay there. But that was really what kicked off my, what I call financial revolution. I was so tired of trying to figure out how to make money. I was like, wait, I'm making money, but it just goes. Like, I know New York is expensive, but I don't really have anything to show for it in my savings or investment accounts. And I don't understand investing. It's quite scary to me. I cashed out of my 401k with the Estee Lauder companies when I needed more money for my robe business. Again, all little like financial learnings and precursors to what would ultimately become Factora. But after I got that salary increase at the fashion tech company, kind of fell into being a salary negotiation coach. I was just like, oh my gosh, did you know, friend, that there is a salary range for every job? Like you can literally type in assistant creative director, how many years of experience, and between Glassdoor and salary.com and Payscale, you can literally put this like range together and make sure that you're at the top of it. Because I know all of you work so hard. Let's make sure that you're getting paid appropriately. And this was early days, you know, gender equality pay conversations. They were not popular at the time. But so I helped a bunch of friends go and get big salary increases. And then they told their friends. And then I was like, I don't know you. And I'm spending like 3 hours talking to you a night, getting prepared for a compensation conversation. So I think I'm going to charge you. And that's how I became a salary negotiation coach. But I really only reemphasized what I was experiencing personally, which was now that I'm really good at asking for more money, getting the more money, it doesn't mean I have more money. Making and keeping are two very different things. And that's where I was like, something's wrong with me financially. Like I know how to make money and yet where is it at? Like, why can't I see it? Why isn't it growing? If I don't actually learn how to keep it, then I'm always going to have to go out and hustle just as hard to make it. And that's when I was like, I got to fix this. I do not have quality financial acumen, habits, information. And so I did. I read as many financial books as you can stomach and podcasts. And ultimately, that's what led me to a company called The Financial Gym.
Right, which I'm familiar with. And I was actually just thinking about this. I think that you were there when I was living in New York, and I think we're on an email chain from way back. I'm going to have to look after
this. What a small world. I'm sure we are.
It is a very small world. But anyway, so tell me about your experience at Financial Gym and how you came up with the idea for Factora.
Yeah, so I had been asked on a podcast to talk about my salary negotiation skills, and it was my first podcast and I was very nervous. And so I remember re-listening to the episode.
Was it Shannon's podcast?
No. It was called Listen Money Matters.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Cause she had a podcast about like cocktails and something. It was like interesting.
Maybe like money and mimosas or something.
Right. There was some alcohol involved.
Yeah.
Nice.
No. So I was on someone else's podcast and I listened to my episode and I was in the shower. And you know how if you don't stop it, it just goes on to the next episode. And the next episode was them talking to Shannon, the founder of The Financial Gym. And as she started talking, I was like, this is what I need. I need support in keeping the money, making a plan to just keep the money, not let it all go back out the door. And that's what she was doing. She was doing what she called financial training, kind of like you would go to a gym to get trained by a trainer. You would go to the financial gym to have someone help you train your money. So I loved the concept. And I showed up at her office the very next day. She was not there. Her only hire at the time, Bridget, was there. And I was like, hi, I need to talk to Shannon. I'd like to work here. You see, I'd found out by this point that I was really good at getting jobs by just annoying people until they hired me. So I had no doubt that I was going to work for her. It was just a matter of how. And so, yeah, so I was her second hire.
And now we're going to take a quick break to hear a word from our sponsors. Customer service and call centers are rarely topics that people get excited about, but Awesome CX is simply different. Their inclusive culture rooted in wellness and fun means that their teams are encouraged to be their best selves personally and professionally by providing them with everything from mental health and healthcare resources to career development. And regardless of the size of your business, Awesome CX is uniquely positioned to support you throughout your growth. They work with some of the fastest growing startups like FabFitFun, Carbon 38, Lettuce Grow, Mudwater, and so many more. Want to see it to believe it? Just email me directly at lee@stairwaytoceo.com to request to join one of their coffee chats where you can meet with their amazing team and witness the agent engagement yourself. You'll be so impressed. I can't wait for you to learn more about Awesome CX to make your brand's customer experience awesome. Thank you so much to our incredible sponsors for supporting the Stairway to CEO podcast. Now let's get back to the show.
That's awesome. And so you were head of marketing and partnerships there. What are some of the lessons that you learned while you were there? And how did you start Factora?
Yeah. So I think, you know, it was a great run. I was only there about a year, but we did partnerships with the Skim, the Muse. Like I really was all about where can we find the women focus groups who need to know about this company. And so I think I've always had just a natural knack for business development and community connectivity. And so that's really what I focused on there. But I also, from my Decoded Fashion and startup realm, where I had been hosting startup pitch competitions, again, focused on the retail and like consumer fashion space, I had a bug for startups. And so when I met Shannon, she was really like looking for a SBA loan to keep the company going. And I was like, have you heard of venture? I actually think you'd be a much better fit for that. So I helped her in her pursuit of raising a seed round. And yeah, I learned a lot of lessons from watching that experience. I also learned that I really was more passionate about helping women build wealth than anything else I had touched on in my career. I think it's one thing to understand where your income goes, and it's a whole nother thing to make a strategy for investing it, feel confident enough to do so, and doing more and more of it. So I had just left Decoded Fashion to start working for the financial gym. And every year I used to go to Southwest, the Austin Tech Festival, and I still had my ticket. So I was like, I'm going to go, but how fun that I'm going to actually go to Austin without needing to be a part of a company and make sales and business happen. I'm just going to kind of hang out and look around. And I happened to meet my now husband. So I met him right at the beginning of starting at the financial gym. And it was not long until we realized we did not want to live apart, especially with my newfound financial knowledge about cost of living. I was very, very open to a change. I'd been in New York for over 7 years. And so we made a plan for me to move to Austin. And so left financial gym. I came here. I just couldn't stop thinking about wanting. It felt like a sentence would not stop tapping at the base of my neck. That's kind of the best way to describe it. And it was just this like annoying little comment, help women build wealth, help women build wealth, help women build wealth all day long. And I was like, I started a company. It was a failure. I was supposed to be the robe woman. It didn't happen. I'm not putting myself back out there. Like, shut up, brain. And it wouldn't. So I thought, well, okay, if I'm going to end up building another company, I want to do things a lot differently. One, I knew how important it was to have my personal financial life together. So I did many things different in that respect. But two, I thought, okay, well, if I'm in a new city and I don't know anyone, I should go to work for a place where all the entrepreneurs gather. So there was a co-working space called Galvanize, and I became their membership manager. I got to know all the local VCs, angels, entrepreneurs, which was really great from a networking standpoint. And as soon as I was ready, I launched what would become Factora, which had a different name originally. It was the L Factor, which is too close to Elvest. And I had too many people get me confused with Sally Krawcheck raising multi-millions of dollars that I was like, let's change this name early. And so I cut off the L, added an A, and we became Factora. And I launched Factora with 8 women in a dark, hot conference room in East Austin, not knowing exactly what it would become. Didn't know any of the terminology, didn't know that I was creating a product, that I was creating a course product, that I didn't really know anything more than I want to teach women what I've learned. And then the way it ended up manifesting was getting packaged into a course and a curriculum with a community. Because doing it in person, I only did because I thought, let me beta test in a room with women to see like, okay, what order should I put this information in? And then later realizing these people just became friends. My first 8 customers are like some of my closest friends today, which I don't think many people get to say. And I feel so lucky that I do. And my biggest brand evangelists and loyal, you know, followers.
That's awesome. So how big is the community today?
We have had 2,000 women take the Wealth Circle. And this spring,
is that the name of the course?
Yes, the course is called it. So the company is Factora. Our course is the Well Circle. And spring will be our 31st Well Circle.
Oh, wow. And so do you have events? And what else do you do, I guess, to bring this community together?
Yeah, we used to have a big event strategy. We got very fortunate early on. I mean, the community had maybe 150 followers on Instagram, and we managed to get a partnership with Capital One. So I have a podcast called Coffee and Coin, where I very transparently just interview a woman on her financial life. What are her successes? Equally important, her setbacks and her strategies. And I knew that I needed to host in-person conversations like this, where I just sat down on a stool next to someone and I was like, tell me what it looks like inside your financial trunk. And I started this at a local coffee shop near my house in Austin. And then Capital One actually picked up the series. And so we would do it in swanky Capital One cafes with mimosas and lattes and matchas and past breakfast hors d'oeuvres. So that was really fun. And that was kind of how we got a lot of wind in our sails to get people understanding what it looks like when women come together to talk about money, that it's actually not scary. It can be really fun and exciting to share this information. And that was our original way that we marketed the Wealth Circle. And since then, obviously, COVID put a damper on the live events for a few years, but we still host monthly community events on different financial topics. We've done everything from 401k rollovers to what to do about your student loans in, you know, the period where you could defer them, estate planning, all of it. Anything that's on the financial purview, we love to talk about it.
That's awesome. And so you've bootstrapped this business yourself. You said that earlier when we were talking that you turned down some funding. You also experienced some burnout. Can you kind of walk us through those stories?
Yeah. So funding, I think I thought was extremely sexy. And I knew the stats on it that, you know, 98% of the funding is going to male-founded companies. And I wanted to be part of the ratio change maker there. So I definitely built Factora with the idea that we would raise capital and get an injection so that we could market faster, bigger, grow, scale, all the startup terminology. I didn't quite calibrate that well with my age and life phase, which was 35, wanting to start a family, not something I can kick the can down the road for too long. So I was never not planning to raise. And then it just so happened that we hit a bit of a flywheel in the beginning and we didn't need to. And so I just kept building and working. And we actually had a prominent angel investor take the course, love it so much. She was just taking it from a advisor capacity, but like it so much that she wanted to invest in it, which I will say did tickle my ego that I didn't have to write a pitch deck and go to all the competitions and submit. And so we walked that path pretty far until ultimately I had sent in the paperwork, or our lawyers had was making the transition from LLC to C Corp so that we could actually put additional, like, you know, companies on the cap table instead of people. And I had this gut check moment where I was like, if I get on this path, it's going to be really hard to get off of. And I want to start a family right now. And I don't want to be scaling at all costs, knowing that. And so I wrote back the lawyers and I was like, can we actually cancel the corporation? And they were like, we've never had anyone ask us that. So give us a minute to check. And there was a 72-hour grace period and we were able to like undo it.
That's crazy. And then what about the angel investor? Was she like WTF or was she like, I understand? Were you like, I want to start a family? And she, I mean, did you tell her that or were you,
I don't know,
how did you break the news?
I don't know if I ever really went into the family side of things, but I think she was bummed, you know, like tell me how I lost the deal. And I was like, you know, it's just not a right fit. I didn't feel like I needed to reveal all my cards at that time.
Yeah. I mean, because there's women that have raised venture capital that have been pregnant and have had families. I mean, even the founder of Ritual, I think she's got like three kids, you know, a lot of founders.
Totally. I felt very strongly that I didn't have the capacity to do both. Again, I don't know if that's my age or my energy or a combination or what, but I just felt that, and from my experience at Financial Gym, like, when you raise funding and now you have investors involved and they have a vision too, oftentimes you have to acquiesce and collaborate with that vision. And I just felt so strong in my own. I didn't want to bring in anything to muddy that. I want to be clear. We were taking capital under the guise that we were going to build proprietary technology for Factora. So there could be like a really cool app and all these things, but I had never built tech. And so I quite frankly wasn't excited to do it. I was like, oh God, how do I do this? Like, do I need a CTO? Like, I'm a non-technical. Anyways, it just all felt like wrong timing for me. And I'm sure, as you know, timing comes to play.
Or just going a different direction than you wanted to take, you know, and you wanted to build something that you had maybe more control over and you had a vision for, and you didn't want to like kind of have other distractions, where I think a lot of other founders would have been like, yeah, let's do it. I'm going to try to figure it out. And then they try to find the CTO and they go through that whole headache. It's a big headache and a different type of business for sure. So, and then what about burnout?
Oh, the burnout's so real. Even just hearing about a founder with three kids and raising and scaling, I'm like, oh, I'm past my prime. Again, was just so passionate about this topic. Our mission is lead 1 million women to 1 million in net worth. That's a big mission. And it's one I'm so excited to be able to sit here and tell you is working. Like, we have so many women in our community who are on a weekly basis crossing that millionaire threshold. And I also want to be very clear that Factora doesn't manage anyone's money. So they are doing this on their own. We were just a catalyst, and here's some investment fundamentals and personal finance education that's going to make you feel confident and raring to go. And the community element is so supportive, and there's a lot of accountability that we build into the course. So again, you can really cross that chasm from knowing what to do and doing it, which, like, you know, even with our health, we all know to probably get a little more sleep and to eat a little better. It's doing it that's like much harder than knowing it, in my opinion. So when I started Factora, I just had this big mission, and I don't think I really looked down the road at what does sustainable longevity look like. In fact, you know, I didn't look down the road because I was thinking, get capital, scale, scale, scale. I mean, I thought we were going to be on Super Bowl commercials, and we went a different path, and that's fine. But I don't think I took the time to really think, okay, well, if we're going a path that's, you know, more defined by my own vision, what does that look like in terms of work? And so I just never really slowed down with the work component of it. And I did experience a tremendous amount of burnout with my first pregnancy because we were launching. The way our business is formatted is that we run a Well Circle spring and fall, and we have a big launch cycle to get leads in and then convert them a month and a half before the Well Circle starts. And it's all encompassing. And that was happening, you know.
No maternity leave when you're running your own business.
Nope. Especially not when you're the one who teaches the Well Circle, when you lead all these community events. I hadn't really planned for that.
And so how did you get out of it, or how did you recover from the burnout, or like, how long did it last?
I don't know if I'm recovered. Truly. I'm only running one Well Circle this year for the first time because I would like to have another kid, and I do not feel like, when I channel back to that time, I'm like, no way.
Well, it's good also, you know, to build a business that's sustainable, that you can, you don't have to be in doing everything yourself, right? So that's also, I think, a good sign of scale that you're able to not have to do everything yourself.
Yeah. We've been all over the map. If I'm being transparent, and I always am, we've had at one point 6 full-time employees. We were on a flywheel for a little bit. It was great. Like, it caused a lot of breakage in the business because we weren't really prepared for it when it popped off. Like, COVID, surprisingly, maybe not so surprisingly, was really incredible for our business. People, for many reasons, were like, it's time to pay attention to this. And I don't think we were in person and then we shifted online in 2020, like literally when COVID hit, people really wanted to take a course, be on Zoom, learn this topic at that moment where things felt very unstable and unsure. Like, how do I get security where I can, which is with my money? And none of us could have known that there was going to be a lot of additional, like, money in the ether. You know, we all were kind of preparing for the worst, and it wasn't so bad financially for many. And so, you know, now it's 4 years later, and I think Zoom fatigue is real. And, you know, we've been talking about a recession for the last 2 years. And so, you know, you tell that to people enough and they're like, okay, well, it's really coming now. So I have to be very cautious with where I spend my consumer dollars.
Absolutely. And so how much is it? Like, what are the price ranges for your courses? I know you said you had like 2,000 people in the community, but what are, I guess, the price points if someone's listening and wants to be checking you guys out?
Yeah. So the Well Circle is $1,800 to join. It's a 12-week course, but it comes with lifetime access to the community. That was another business decision that I made maybe a little unintentionally early on, but then I've doubled down on it since. I think a lot of people want to charge you for being in a community annually or monthly or whatever it is. But again, since I don't have investors saying we need a subscription rate of XYZ, I just offer it as lifetime access, because the Well Circle is like, here's where we're all going to get the foundation and we're going to talk the talk and start walking the walk and understand these investment terms that maybe felt nebulous before. And then we're going to build wealth for the rest of our life. So let's have access to a community that's also doing that. Like, we're still going to have a job next year and we're still, and then we're going to have new things happen. Maybe we have a child and we want to talk about 529s and we did not care about that 3 years ago. So it's a $1,800 price tag for lifetime access to the course and the community. And then we do have one other course. It's called Six Figure Savings. If you buy the Well Circle, it comes included for women who aren't ready to learn investment fundamentals and start investing. The precursor is this savings course. It's going to help you understand your current expenses, save an emergency fund, get a little bit more cash saved so that you can move over to focusing on investing.
That's awesome. Well, and then with the community, how much engagement is there? Is like, are people talking every day about stuff? Like, what's it like to be in that community?
Every day. Let me just open it up and let's see what people are talking about right now. So we have different channels. We have like city-based channels. I know there was just a big meetup in Austin, LA, and New York recently, which is so amazing. Again, these women become friends from sharing interest in one topic, which is, I want to increase my net worth. I want to be better with money and investing.
And so they just like put these events on themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. They meet up.
That's cool.
It's really, really cool. So we have the way we teach in the Well Circle about investing is there are three main asset classes: paper assets, which includes the stock market, real estate, and business. Business is twofold. You can either start your own business or you can invest in someone's business. There's a lot of women who come through this course that don't even realize they're accredited investors and they can get access to startup deal flow. They just haven't heard this terminology. And so, you know, I think 90% of women come to Factora for the stock market portion and they stay for the community and the access to additional creative investment ideas. So we've had women co-invest on real estate deals together, become angel investors, and go in on startup deals together. It's really cool for that. But so we have a crypto channel, we have a business channel, we have paper assets channel, real estate channel. We have a family channel for people who want to talk about, you know, setting up accounts for children or nieces, all of that. And then the best channel of all is a Money Wins channel where women just literally come and share, big or small, the recent big wins that have happened. Okay. So the most recent thing in here is defunded my I bonds from last year, 1.5K in interest, reinvested by fully funding mine and my husband's Roth IRA for this year. I put 500 towards AI stocks and deposited the rest in a high yield savings account at 5%. I'm so excited. And then people just start talking about whether they're doing I bonds or what was the experience. And like, you know, it's just everyone sharing like little things, big things.
That's awesome. So where does it go from here? You've got, you know, so much going on. You've got these courses, you've got this community. What's the, you know, I guess the vision or ultimate goal? What's next for Factora?
I'm very much considering that right now. I don't think I have a perfect answer for you. I know that we are going to keep doing what we've been doing and teaching women how to be confident wealth builders because they're so capable of it. Like, so capable. It's the most amazing part of this experience for me is to watch women go from overwhelm to pure delight when it comes to investing. It's like, nope, that's a conversation I don't know anything about. I don't really want to know anything about, to, oh, this isn't so hard. This is actually quite interesting. And I can set up my own investment portfolio, and I understand diversification and asset allocation and rebalancing. And like, this isn't that complicated. And there's a whole financial advisor industry that's there to tell you it is, and you shouldn't pay attention. We are the expert. You are the novice. You show us yours. We'll never show you ours, which is why I have taken the approach of being so transparent with my financial successes and setbacks along the way.
Yeah, so interesting. You know, a lot of, I don't know, I had a friend and I have a few people I feel like in my life, especially women, that when they get married, it's like all of a sudden they don't like think about finances anymore because that's the man's job, or that's just kind of like what he does and knows about. And so then they don't ask questions. They have no idea. Like, it's just so in the dark. I always found that so fascinating. Like, how can you be in the dark?
So those friends I talked about in the beginning that truly are my best friends, not so bestie that they listen to all the podcasts I'm on, so I doubt they'll hear this, but I have found a common thread of, well, a lot of these friends I'm thinking about, they got married and they have a very similar profile. The husband had a golf buddy that was a financial advisor. They now use this person as their financial advisor and they feel like that's good. Like, we did check, someone is advising us and is managing our money. I also want to be very clear, Factora is agnostic over any financial institution or service or credit card you use. Like, there are definitely women in the Slack channel constantly sharing referral links. They're like, I love Copilot. It's the best app I found to manage our household finances. Here's my referral link if anyone wants it. But Factora is like, you do what works for your financial setup. We have a lot of women who come in either without financial advisors who are interested in, or with financial advisors who feel confused by what they should be getting out of that relationship and how much they're really being charged. And so we're just giving information on whether you would like to have a financial advisor or not. You are capable of managing investments. How do I know? Because if you have a retirement account through an employer, you are self-managing. That's what you're doing. Like, if they're set up with Fidelity or Schwab or whoever, they are saying these are the different investment selections and funds that are available within this institutional platform. Go pick what you want. And obviously, a lot of people pick target date funds based on the year they think they're retiring. But all I care is that you understand what you have and you can make changes when you need to. Because I don't have a financial advisor and I plan on having one when I have a certain net worth where it makes sense. I need that person to help me from a tax perspective and being really smart with allocations based on the type of wealth I'm going to have. But a lot of the women who I see come in who, like, their family had this advisor, so they just started using them, or again, the husband scenario, I just don't want people to hand over their entire financial autonomy because they don't think they're smart enough to do it themselves. And that is why I think this industry is ripe for disruption.
I couldn't agree with you more. And thanks so much for sharing your story. And I love what you're doing at Factora. Before we wrap things up, what's some final advice that you have for either aspiring entrepreneurs listening or women trying to get wealthy?
So for aspiring entrepreneurs, if you have an idea that's banging at the base of your neck, it is going to create value in this world, both for potential customers, but also for you and what you are going to learn through the failures, through the strife, through the successes. Make like Nike and do it. Like, if you are someone, in my opinion, lucky enough to have an idea befall you that you can't get rid of, just figure out how to put it in the world. Don't overthink it. You're going to build the plane as you go. Just do it. I get teary just saying that. Okay. And then, no, but I really mean it. Like, we need more.
It's awesome. True. I mean, if you're lucky enough to get the idea, it's, yes, true, because sometimes people, no, and it takes, I mean, I've been trying to figure out my next thing for the past 3 years, you know, and it's, I finally have it, but it's really not a fun place to be if you know you want to start something and you don't have that aching thing that you really want to work on, that you're passionate about, that constantly like comes to your mind. And it's such a blessing.
Exactly. So if you have that, like, don't not share it with the world. You, yeah, will
this
get
is your sign.
Yeah, this is
your sign. Go do it.
Okay. And then for aspiring wealth builders out there, same advice, but for investing. Investing is not hard. Investing is not complicated. You are meant to think by an entire industry that it is. You're already doing it if you have ever utilized a 401k or a IRA. You can do more of it. And I suggest that you do, because compound interest is the eighth wonder of the world. That's a quote by Einstein, okay? And it's really amazing when you have it working in your favor instead of against you. So what do I mean by that? If you're someone who has a credit card, APRs are typically, you know, 15 to 25%. You'd be really lucky to make that kind of return somewhere. But this is why it's so important to understand your financial life and what comprises it. Because when we're paying credit card interest, or if we're paying interest to someone else, we are not able to make it for ourselves. So go learn how to invest. And if you're a woman who wants to do it in community, you're always welcome to check out Factora.
I love that advice. Thank you. One thing that came to mind, I was just thinking about this whole transparency thing. And I was like, you know, would you agree that there so many people have their wealth or their net worth so tied to their personal identity and their self-worth? Yeah.
Yeah. We have a quote about that all the time. We're like, your net worth is not your self-worth. It has nothing to do with, because think about this. And I've seen this profile. I've seen women come into the wealth circle with millions of dollars in net worth and negative hundreds of thousands of dollars. I remember this woman who came in one time, and I happened to be in her breakout group, and she was very nervous and embarrassed to share that she had $350,000 in debt from going to law school, that her father suggested she goes to the best law school she got into, said he would help her, and then did not. And she had so much shame and pain around that, because she wasn't even really doing it for herself, right? She was doing it for someone else's approval. And like, these things happen. We all make financial choices that we're not proud of. And that's okay. We're human. We make daily lifestyle choices we're not proud of too. But we can make choices we're really proud of by getting the clarity and the knowledge and the comfort. And the only way you get the comfort is just by doing it, right? Is like understanding how to make a plan for that debt, understanding how to start investing alongside that once you've got, you know, the interest lower. And then, like I said, I've seen women with $1 million net worth, but sometimes that net worth isn't money that they made. And so then they feel like, we have all these feelings around money is the point. But a number that's in a spreadsheet that is your net worth is simply your assets minus your liabilities, whether it's negative, whether it's positive. It has nothing to do with you, the person, the human, the soul, the wonderful friend.
Yeah. It's so hard to separate that, but it really reminds me so much of like sending an investor update where like, I saw you guys on your LinkedIn, like I was saying, from when we first started this interview, you guys were being so transparent about numbers and your cash and this investments and this and that. And I'm like, whoa, they're being so out there. And in the same way, that's what entrepreneurs have to do all the time. Every month they send an investor update. Here's the numbers about my company. And if you're running that company, you're the founder, it's really hard to not feel attached to those numbers, and it affects you. And I'm sure in the same way, obviously, with your personal finances and corporate finances, if it's your business, it's all just tied together. And it takes so much vulnerability to be, I think, transparent and comfortable with it. And detaching your identity and your self-worth from it is super important.
I think that's why it's so hard to do alone. Humans, we vibe on connection, right? Like, life isn't fun alone. That's why we go out and get partners and start families and create friendships. I have found that, and by the way, people thought I was crazy when I was starting the Wealth Circle. I'm like, here's what I'm going to do. I don't really know exactly, but I know I'm going to get a bunch of women in the room who are strangers, and they're going to share all their numbers out loud. What do you think? And my friends were like, I would never do that. Why are you doing that? Like, you are not going to have a business. And it is amazing, because once you say it out loud, it's just that, it's a number. No one remembers. No one cares. It's just a starting place. Do we want to grow it or shrink it, depending on which number we're talking about? And so I think it's hard for people to do alone, but I think in community, because, you know, there's that social acceptance when other people are doing it, I can do it too, that it's not a big deal.
That's awesome. Well, again, love what you're doing. Thank you so much for joining me today, and best of luck with the future of Fectora.
Thanks so much for having me, Lee. I really appreciate you sharing my story.
Thank you so much for listening to the Stairway to CEO podcast. Once again, I'm your host, Lee Green. And if you have any burning business questions, please feel free to reach us at www.stairwaytoceo.com. We'd love to hear from you. And if you like what you hear, be sure to subscribe to the show, tell your friends, leave us a review, and follow us on Instagram at Stairway to CEO. Until next time, guys, keep on climbing.